I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. How long does it take a bus rider to get from Sandtown Winchester in West Baltimore to a decent-paying job in Hunt Valley, or at the airport, or in the new Amazon distribution center? Up to 90 minutes one way, according to an advocacy group called Transit Choices. And that's if the buses show up and don't pass by because they're overcrowded. Many riders complain that the transit system here is disconnected and makes a headache out of getting to jobs, appointments, and school. Connecting people who live in inner city Baltimore to jobs that pay a decent wage is one of the goals of Transit Choices, which says the city's patchwork system needs to be overhauled. A look at public transportation, commuting, and the working poor on Midday after the news. And welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. Every day, thousands of riders take MTA buses, light rail, and the metro to get to work, to appointments, or to class. Over the years, Baltimore's mass transit system has received decidedly mixed reviews. The problems of the daily commute are especially acute for people who do not have another option, do not own a car. Today, a look at another challenge related to life in inner city Baltimore, getting to work using public transportation. How long does it take people in, say, West Baltimore or East Baltimore to get to suburban locations such as Hunt Valley, Columbia, or BWI at the airport, or the new Amazon plant in southeast Baltimore, to work at higher-paying jobs that could lift them out of poverty? We're going to talk about this today. Joining us in the studio is Jimmy Rouse, who's worked for the past 2.5 years to transform Baltimore's transit system as a founding member of a grassroots coalition called Transit Choices that we're going to hear about today. The goal of this group, which includes more than 140 community organizations and businesses, cultural institutions, universities, and transit experts, is to create an integrated, user-friendly, environmentally sustainable transit system. How do you like that? Over the next 5 decades in Baltimore, that will include heavy rail, light rail, streetcar, buses, and even water taxis. Jimmy Rouse, nice to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And along with Jimmy Rouse is Klaus Philipson, president of ArcPlan Incorporated, the architect here in Baltimore, a member of Transit Choices, and a Midday contributor who blogs at Community Architect. Klaus, nice to have you back on the show.
Good to be back. Thanks.
So, Jimmy, let's start with Transit Choices there. I just gave a quick summary of this.
So Transit Choices started about 2.5 years ago, and it was an outgrowth of our effort at the Charles Street Development Corporation to bring streetcars into the mix of transit. Particularly, we were lobbying for one up Charles Street. And as I went around the city trying to drum up support for streetcars, we went to Don Fry at GBC, and he said he was focused on the Red Line. And we went to CMTA, Central Maryland Transit Authority, which is another business group devoted to transit. They were focused on the MARC train. And we went to Downtown Partnership and talked to Kirby Fowler. He was focused on the circulator. And so they all had their pet projects. And then we went out to MDOT, Maryland Department of Transportation, and talked to Leif Dormjo, who was head of acting secretary then, before Jim Smith was appointed. Mm-hmm. And he said to us an analogy which I loved. He said, Baltimore transportation planning is like crabs in a barrel. You have all these groups struggling to get to the top of the basket. Yeah. When one gets up, the others pull it down. So GBC, CMTA, Downtown Partnership all had their pet projects, all struggling for state funding. And as a result, he said he was comparing Baltimore's transit planning to Montgomery County, who he'd just met with before us, and saying how well organized they were. So we sensed that there was this lack of unity and vision in transit planning for Baltimore. And we held a symposium at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Doreen gave us the space. Doreen Bulger gave us the space. And we invited a speaker, Chris Leinberger, from the Brookings Institute. And we invited 70 or so people influential people in the city to attend. And the subject was, you know, the role of transit in a 21st century city. And of the 70 people we invited, over 60 showed up. And that was, for us, the first indication of the intense interest there was in the city on transit. And Chris gave a very interesting talk, just briefly. He said before World War II, real estate development was concentrated in urban areas. After World War II, that shifted to suburban. He said now what's happening is a sea change, and increasingly in the 21st century, real estate development will be concentrated in creating walkable urban places, even in the suburbs. And he pointed to six strip malls in Arlington along the metro route, all of which had been redeveloped from retail centers to mixed-use residential, commercial, and retail.
All connected to a transit lines.
All connected to a transit system. He said the cities that are going to create jobs and do the best economically in the 21st century are going to be the cities that connect these walkable urban places, both in the city and the suburbs, to each other.
And you say Baltimore system is disconnected.
Right. Disconnected and not planned as a unit, planned one project at a time. So, in Baltimore, we have Columbia is adding residents and commercial office space to its mall area. Hunt Valley is doing the same. Owings Mills is doing the same. And downtown, we have Inner Harbor East. We're seeing that idea of walkable urban places being created in and around Baltimore. So if we're going to talk about attracting 10,000 families to the city and creating jobs in this city, having a viable, effective, efficient, comprehensive, regional, multimodal transit system is certainly what we need to create. So how do you go about creating that?
One of the issues we want to explore today is the one that you brought to us during the conversations we've had the last few weeks since the death of Freddie Gray, the riot of April 27th, all the unrest in the city, and that is the long commutes that people in the inner city face when going to jobs that are at job centers, Klaus, out in the suburbs, right? I want to hear from one of them here, Carlos Gilmore, who works in the kitchen at the Belvedere Hotel in Baltimore. He said he leaves his home 2 hours before his 11 a.m. shift each day in order to make it to work on time using the MTA bus. Just to give you one example here, he spoke to us at the bus stop. This was at Northern Parkway and Harford Road.
It can be easy, but they're never on time. I have to make sure I'm here way early, so it cuts a lot of time out. I can't spend with my children and my family because I have to make sure that I'm here early because I never know when it's going to show up. They have a schedule, but they don't adhere to it because I come when the time says, but taking the bus over and over, I know that it's usually not there. So I just try to make sure I'm early because if I don't show up for work, then I don't have a job and then I can't provide for my family.
So, Jimmy, Klaus, a common sentiment that you hear from people?
So I owned a restaurant on Charles Street.
I remember.
Louis Bookstore Cafe from 1981 to 1998. And I had 95 employees, and a lot of them came from East and West Baltimore. And that story was repeated to me. We had a strict rule, 15 minutes late, three times you were fired, because we were a restaurant and you had to open and somebody had to do the work. So I ended up having to fire very good employees who simply could not navigate the bus system and get to work in a consistent manner. That is actually where my interest in transit began, is seeing that experience for people.
Klaus, what is that evidence of? Is that evidence of a system that just doesn't meet the needs of its population? Poor planning? The way the city's constructed? How do you see it? What the problem that's described in that that conversation we had with Carlos Gilmore?
Yeah, I'm a little bit a contrarian, so I will first say something in favor of MTA. So the MTA system is a lot of transit on the ground. So when we compare our city with other cities of a similar size, we are only number 16 in the country in terms of size, but we are among the top 10 in terms of passenger miles traveled on transit and service provided in transit. So I think transit providers are in popularity just right below the cable companies or above the cable companies. One don't, or maybe, you know, hard to say. They're both very unpopular. You can go to Philadelphia and talk about the SEPTA system, or you can go to Washington and talk about WMATA. And the folks have similar comments. So it is extremely difficult to put all these services on the street and make them all run on time. But it can be done, you know. So I have mentioned this before. I go sometimes to my hometown in Stuttgart, and it's very similar in size. I was just recently over there again. I took the bus. It showed up right on time. You know, maybe that was I take the bus here, and it sometimes shows up right on time. So it is very difficult because we have not done much for transit. Now, the other thing which makes me sort of qualified to say anything about transit is the urban form. And I like this Leinberger quote because not only do the new suburbs have to conform to a certain urbanity before you can even make transit work, you can't have individuals go everywhere scattered all over the place and make transit work. But that's kind of what we did for 50 years after the war. So we did subsidize sprawl. And now the unfortunate situation is that the workplaces for those with low skills that live tend to live in the inner city are far out, because that's where the land is cheap and where you have warehousing and distribution and all that stuff, and you don't have it in the city. So from an urban form point of view, I'm all for bringing stuff back closer to the city. When you look at the opportunities maps, it is really interesting, you know, that in terms of jobs, the largest amount of opportunity is theoretically in the downtown area.
Would you talk for a minute about planners and opportunity maps? So people, I think, you know, the phrase opportunity map suggests something to people. But to be clear, what planners mean by that?
Well, the beautiful thing about transit is that it could really be the unifier for everybody in the city. So we're talking a lot lately about a very divided city. And we are looking for where's the common ground. The transit could be the common ground because, you know, theoretically everybody wants to go places. And we all could meet in the transit vehicles. And the fact of that is that good transit does that. So in New York or in places where transit is very much on top, you know, San Francisco, whatever, you have every class, every race in the transit system. In Baltimore, it's not like that. It's still perceived as, you know, the thing of last choice. You know, if you have any other opportunity, you do something else. So the opportunity mapping goes and starts to connect the transit discussion with the discussion of where do people have opportunity in life in general. So there is opportunity to work. There are jobs, there is retail, there is education. Opportunity mapping has a whole bunch of criteria that all together make a good urban life possible. And where are those and where are they not? And so when the opportunity mapping is done by the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance at the University of Baltimore, they show that the opportunities are usually outside of Baltimore. So the inner city and downtown Baltimore or the Baltimore city boundaries, basically everything inside looks rather bad and everything outside looks rather good. But when you are looking just at jobs, it's sort of the reverse. So you would think, well, why do we have this job access problem? Because, you know, downtown is this huge job center. But of course, the fact is that there's a mismatch between the education and the qualifications that people have that live in the inner city and the jobs that are needed in downtown.
People in the inner city need to get out to these spaces that you were just describing. The Amazon Distribution Center would be another example of one.
So those are the jobs that would lift people out of poverty.
Right.
You know.
Jimmy Rouse with us from Transit Choices, and also Klaus Philipson is also a member of Transit Choices with us in this hour of midday. We have to take our first break, gentlemen. We'll come back and continue this conversation in just a moment. But first, a quick break here on midday for our May Pledge Drive. Andy Beanstalk's in the studio to tell you how to show your support. And this is Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. Today we're talking about getting around Baltimore by bus or using public transportation and the importance that the transit system has on the ability of people to get and retain a good, solid job. Before we go on, let's hear from another MTA bus rider. This is Keontae, who didn't want to use his, give us his last name. A 21-year-old student, anyway, at the Baltimore City Community College. He takes the bus to classes each day and has to transfer to get there. For him, he says the experience is pretty much okay.
It works pretty good, except sometimes it don't come on time. That's the only thing. It be running late. But if it run late, I can say, like, two buses are coming behind it if it's running late.
Now let's listen to the experience of a young mother, Rebecca, also didn't want to give us a last name, who daily takes her 11-month-old son on bus rides around town in order to get to doctor's appointments, work, and childcare.
It's very hard. Like this morning, no one would get up so me and my son could sit down. So we stood for a little ways, but then I was holding him. So it's hard because it's just me usually. But when his father's here, he helps like hold everything. But it's usually just me holding the baby and the stroller. So, well, I take the bus everywhere. So to his doctor appointments, you know, I work off Cold Spring Avenue. So I have to leave about 2 hours early every day just so I can catch the bus on time.
2 hours. Jimmy Rouse is with us from Transit Choices and Baltimore architect Klaus Phillipson. Jimmy Rouse, before I go to speak to a representative from the Maryland Transit Administration in just a moment, your eyes opened, I guess, when you opened a restaurant and ran a restaurant, your eyes were open to this problem of people getting to work by bus. But since you started Transit Choices and looked into this further, you saw this as a serious problem, access to jobs, access to appointments, and the time it takes to commute.
Well, everywhere you go, you hear these anecdotal stories. And then the Opportunity Collaborative, which is a function of Metropolitan Planning Council, did studies where they showed that on maps that people in East and West Baltimore, the commute one way to any of the job centers, BWI Nursery, Amazon, Hunt Valley, that commute was over 90 minutes one way. And that's if the bus shows up and if it's not overcrowded and passes you by.
You just mentioned Opportunity Collaborative. Would you explain that to our listeners, please?
Maybe Klaus would be better than I would.
What exactly is it?
Well, it's under the Baltimore Metropolitan Council using a federal grant to study housing, jobs, and transportation together. And they are presenting a report on June the 8th. And they have already done a workforce report and certain parts. And so various cities use these opportunity collaborative is our term, these federal funds slightly differently. But the object is to improve transit and job access and economic development, basically. So to tie it all together.
The MTA has a bus network improvement project underway. Parts of it have already been implemented. Michael Walk is joining us now, Director of Service Development at the Maryland Transit Administration. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Hi, glad I could be here.
Yeah, what is the status of the bus network improvement project? And specifically, we're looking here at the access to jobs, that part of it. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in terms of a status, it's sort of been the most popular question so far. New administration that has come into MDOT and MTA obviously needs, you know, adequate time to take a look at the work that was done up to this point and really make a decision about, you know, where we go from here. So we, you know, took the opportunity back in February to implement a few changes that we saw were necessary. And, you know, those changes were adding a bus route that served the Amazon facility in southeast Baltimore, adding a bus route that better connected Canton and Dundalk together with the downtown, and also making some other changes to bus routes in order to try to deal with overcrowding issues that we were seeing in the West Baltimore area. So we took the opportunity to, you know, do what we could in the time that we had, and now we're, you know, really just trying to make sure that the work that's done can continue and we know what direction we have to go in regarding future planning efforts.
And as far as the future goes, you know, this money is a big piece of this, right? Expansion of services, expansion of routes, more buses, more frequent light rail, all of that is it's a question of what the government is willing to spend, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always a sort of a trade-off. Anything new, you know, so adding another mile of service, adding more buses per hour or more trains per hour, it's going to cost something if you keep everything else constant, right? So all things being equal, new service means more cost. You know, I mean, I think the big challenge for any transit plan or any transit administration is to try to make sure that the way the system is designed is the most efficient and effective it can be with the resources that you do have before you start asking people for, you know, more resources, more money in order to add things. Is what you have already, you know, working at optimum capacity? And I think that's the big question, you know, that's certainly on our minds every day. And we want to make sure that we've answered that question before we add cost to the system.
How do you identify routes that need more work, more improvement? Are these surveys based on what riders have to say, or do you identify opportunity centers using an opportunity map to see where people need to be for jobs?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of sources of input, Stan. There's, like you talked about, from the rider base. You know, mm-hmm. we get recommendations for service changes from riders themselves as individuals, from community groups, from elected officials. You know, MTA and MDOT are also on the Opportunity Collaborative project. So we're stakeholders in that project. We've been involved from the beginning. You know, making sure that everything made sense. And, you know, so that's another source, right? So looking at these broader perspectives beyond just what a single person wants. And, I mean, those are the basic places we go to, right? We're looking mm-hmm. at our planning, looking at the data and how the system is structured and what needs are there. And also sometimes people raise concerns to us that we weren't aware of at all, you know, no matter how much data you look at. Sometimes you can't catch every shortfall in the network.
I want to ask Jimmy Rouse and Klaus Philipson this question. So here we are in Baltimore. We have a metro system that was built back in the 70s. We have a light rail system that was built in the 90s when Camden Yards opened, right? We have a bus system that's been in place for a long time, streetcars that disappeared a long time ago. But I leave something out. Metro. Okay. So there's all these pieces, right? As you said before, right. It's a patchwork of transportation right. options that overall gets very mixed reviews from its users, right? In terms of the time it takes to commute from one place to another, the lack of ease, the number of transfers that are required, right? So how do you, so looking from the sky down on this, you'd say, well, this is really complicated. How are we gonna coordinate all this?
So Transit Choices is taking two approaches. One was we divided into five work groups for each modality. And then we assign those work groups with the task of coming up with five or six things that could be done in the next year or two that were low costs but would make an impact, immediate impact on transit system. And that was number one. The second thing we assigned each group with is to come up with a longer term vision for that modality about what would be ideal. What would be the ideal rail system? Would it include streetcars? What would be an ideal bus system? I mean, there are all sorts of strategies. You could totally rearrange the bus system into a spoke system where you had shorter, more efficient routes. You know, what would be an ideal bus system, thinking from the top down? And how would it relate to the circulator? What would be the proper role of a circulator within that system? How do we include the water taxi into a comprehensive transit system?
Yeah, I left out a couple of pieces.
What do we do with bikes, you know? Yeah. How do we get bikes? What do we do with pedestrians? How do we improve the pedestrian experience? So what we want to do is envision what would be ideal for each of those modalities and put that vision together into one unified vision, which can kind of light the way to what we want in the future. So there are two things we're working on, the quick hits and the long-term vision simultaneously. So in the quick hits, like you have the metro, you have the light rail, you have the circulator, and you have the water taxi, which has a free component to it, the Harbor Connector, which most people don't know about. So when you get on a light rail train right now, there's a map. The map shows you all the stops on that light rail line. It doesn't show you where the light rail intersects the metro or the circulator or how you would get to a water taxi. We're asking for maps on every car at every station, which would show the interconnection of the four systems we have. Just doing that simple thing would begin to help people understand what's available. We don't really even advertise what's available very well. I want to say one other thing about the MTA. The people we've met in the MTA have been great. Michael's doing a great job. They're really devoted to trying to make a better transit system for Baltimore. But the structure of the MTA, it's a regional state-funded group that's running a city metropolitan transit system. So you have 23 counties with representatives, all of whom want pet projects and highways. They don't want to be contributing to an inner city bus system, you know? So the system, the way it's set up, is discriminatory against the poor in the cities because you have a state agency running a regional city, basically city-oriented system. Mm-hmm. So the system
You say it should be more localized. You're suggesting a transit czar just for the Baltimore metro area.
Well,
or something like that.
We at the Transit Choices meeting this morning, Brooke Learman, who's the new delegate from the 46th District, which is all the waterfront neighborhoods, is proposing an oversight board for the MTA, which would include representatives from the mayor's office. She had a list of representatives, which would give probably a more cohesive accountability to what happens at the MTA. So that's one thing. But, you know, we got to make the argument on a statewide basis. I mean, we hear all this attention that, you know, the inner city neighborhoods are blighted. You know, they have all these problems. Well, part of those problems can be solved if we create a better transit system. And it's the responsibility of everybody, not just the people in the city, all these rural legislators, to help us do that.
We have to take another break here. Right. Our segment's a little shorter today because of the pledge drive, but I do want to hear from Klaus Philipson on that. Jimmy Rouse, thank you very much. And Michael Walk from the MTA, thank you for your time today.
No problem.
Stay with us, folks. Our conversation will continue in just a moment. First, another quick break as we try to raise the money it takes to make Midday happen. Here's Andy Beanstalk with the phone number. Thank you, Andy. Our conversation about getting around Baltimore continues in the second hour of the show today with a status report on bicycling as Baltimore tries to catch up with other cities and become more bike-friendly. We'll hear the details of the city's new master plan. That's coming up in the second hour of our show today. Plus, later in the second hour, a conversation about hypermasculinity and the violence it produces with former Baltimore Colt Joe Ehrman, who will be joining us about 1:45 p.m. Let's slip in a quick call here about transportation, public transportation around Baltimore. This is Chris calling from the city. Go right ahead, Chris. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Dan. I've got a quick idea. It's a low cost or lower cost than some of the other projects and would be definitely be high impact. Suppose you took a bus line and made it run like a subway, like have a dedicated lane in traffic, priority at the traffic lights where it could make the light change for the particular bus, and limit the stops. I mean, some of these stops, buses stop on, you know, so frequently. Like, for instance, on Broadway, when you're crossing Broadway on Fayette Street on the 23, you stop before and after the intersection on the same street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed this as a bus rider, too. It stops some places on every block. Is that something, Chris, I'll just ask Jimmy Ross, is that something the work group, any of the work groups have looked at?
Yeah, the bus group's looking at that, how you create a more efficient, and Michael Walk's looking at that with MTA, too.
Klaus Philipson, Jimmy Ross and Klaus Philipson. Klaus, I'll go to you with that big question I was asking Jimmy about how you coordinate all these different systems that have been in place and were built at different times.
Well, a few things. First, do your pledge so that we can get this pledge drive over.
Oh,
it's important to have this station.
Second, thank you for saying that.
Second, efficiency. So yeah, I like this question that Chris just asked because efficiency of the existing bus fleet is, of course, the key to do it so that people are happier with the service without spending a lot of extra money. And that's also where an architect comes into play. I mentioned this earlier once in a previous session here, but Curitiba in Brazil was run by a mayor that was an architect, and he's recognized that transit is a key to getting out of poverty, because if you can't get to jobs, to appointments, to anything, then you are stuck. You are really literally have no mobility and no opportunity. And so he said, well, we don't have all the world's money in Curitiba, although it's a huge city. We can't build a subway system. And even if we could build one line, it's not going to get us anywhere. And he did just what Chris said. He made the buses run in dedicated lanes and run them like a subway. And that was a huge success. And from that, Curitiba all of a sudden was a whole different city, because people now could get places in a reliable manner. Mm. Now, in Baltimore, the discrimination that you can see in the bus service between, say, the commuter services that come out of the outlying areas and into the city that run quite smoothly, and people say, well, what's the problem, right? You can ride those buses and they work very well. But in the poorer areas, you have the crowding, because you have communities that have 50-60% of people that don't own a car. So you have these buses come in and they are quickly overfilled. Then you have the school kids added to this, and then the buses don't stop now at all. And then if they come, they stop forever, because there are so many people who want to get on board. You are board only through the front door. You have cash payments. People are fumbling.
People in wheelchairs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then you have the disabled, you have the kneeling bus, you have all of these delays. And then in no time, you have the buses bunching. So you have all of a sudden three number 23 buses all behind each other. And then, of course, after the last one is through, then there is a long gap in service. And this is culminating. And Michael did a very nice graphic on how this kind of ripples through the system. So the key to changing these inefficiencies and run the system more efficiently is to have fewer stops and much shorter dwell times in the stops. So what I think what should be done is to have cash-free systems, so that you have your charm card that exists already, you pay it in a grocery store. That MTA would need a lot more spaces where you can do that. You fill it up, and that's the payment method. That's what London does, and that's what a lot of other cities do already. And then you board through all the doors and not just the front door. Mm-hmm. And then you have much shorter dwell times. And shorter dwell times means that the buses are used more efficiently. I mean, it's like what Southwest did with their airplanes when they said, well, we are boarding differently, but in our planes is free seating. They freed up every time on boarding 10 minutes or 15, and across the whole fleet, they made better use of their fleet. They could run the things more on time than the competitors.
Jimmy, I wanted to ask you about this, making public transportation more attractive to more people. I mean, one problem we're talking about here today is access to jobs. This is very important. But also just, I mean, people in this town, I talk to them, they say, well, I've tried the bus, it's not reliable.
Right.
I tried the light rail and it doesn't make enough stops for me or something. It doesn't work for me.
So
I frequently hear people
say that.
The
buses can get dirty. They can be smelly. That repulses people. They don't want to do it again if they get on, in addition to being overcrowded. And so this is a resource issue. And that's why I was making the point about, you know, we got to think broader as a state. We got to get rural legislators realizing that solving the problems of urban Baltimore benefits them, because it costs more to maintain these neighborhoods in poverty than it would to fix them. You know, I mean, you put a guy in jail, you're going to spend $25,000 a year. And if you're making these sweeps through the ghetto and putting all these kids in jail, then they can't get jobs when they come out.
You have to make that argument because you need the funding to do this.
Right.
Right.
Right. You got to make the broader arguments.
That's why it is so short-sighted to nickel and dime the red line and say, oh, this thing is too expensive, we cannot afford it.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
We talked about disjointed system. And of course, if you have one metro system, one light rail system, that you can't call that a system yet. But when you have a third, rail line and you have the MARC trains, then you're really getting towards the system. In terms of the length of rail service, we are not even so much worse with compared to Washington. It's just we need to integrate it more. That's what I like about transit choices, that we are looking from the user's perspective. They don't care who deploys the vehicles. They don't care where the money goes that you pay with your fare. They care that, is it easy to use and can I get from A to B in a reliable manner? And the reliability and predictability is the key to all of this. And that's why the efficiency is so important. But you can't do anything without any investment. And a city like Baltimore, to invest into something like the Red Line, which will then run underground through downtown and be very reliable and efficient when you run it that way. It's just like the metro today runs very reliably and efficient. That is just something we need to have a future as a city.
Do you think the way the Red Line has been planned, it takes into account these issues that Jimmy's group has raised
about
coordinating different systems?
I mean, the Red Line's point is that it connects the MARC train and the light rail and the metro. There are stops where they all interconnect. And it has also the beauty that it connects the outer areas like the West Side. I mean, it does really connect the two Baltimores. The disinvested areas on the West Side and the humming areas on the waterfront in Canton, and it does that. And so here we have an opportunity to really put another piece into the puzzle that makes it more of a system. And then we are having these discussions, can we afford this? I think we cannot afford not to do it.
Right. Where do you take it, Jimmy Rouse? So if your work groups continue to work on these ideas and come up with these ideas, the short-term ones and the long-term ones, then where do you take this?
So we met with the new secretary of MDOT, Ron, 2 weeks ago, and introduced him.
Ron.
Pete Ron.
R-H-A-N, Ron, Secretary
Right,
Ron.
Right, Secretary Ron. I'm sorry, I forgot his last name.
So, you know, we introduced him to the quick hits, and he liked a lot of the quick hits. He liked the whole presentation of it, and he's going to work with us. We have a work group that includes Khalil Zayed from the mayor's office, William Johnson from CityDOT. It did include Robert Smith from the MTA. And
now we have a new administrator.
New administrator, mm-hmm. So we got to get him on board. But Ron said he would help with that. And somebody from MDOT. And we agreed to meet quarterly, and we've met three times in the last year, to work on implementation of all these quick hits. So we have the structure there we need. We need to buy in from the new Let me throw out one other idea, just in terms of long range. So the Metro, as it's presently built, extends beyond Hopkins. They built a tunnel several thousand yards or 1,000 yards beyond Hopkins. And one of the ideas is that you would extend that metro up to North Avenue on the east side. So, and at that point, you would create a transportation hub similar to what we have in Mondawmin. You would channel buses into that hub. So
on the east side?
On the east side. So wouldn't it be great if you connected the east side hub along North Avenue to Coppin and Mondawmin with a streetcar? So the advantage of streetcars is economic development follows the route. When people know that you're going to invest in a fixed rail system, you get economic development along the route. It's exactly what North Avenue needs.
And it's different from a light rail.
Different from a
light
rail.
It's in the street. It's in the median strip, or is it in the street?
Well,
itself?
North Avenue has a great opportunity. Yeah. You could put it in the median strip.
Yeah. Right. So, I didn't know about that tunnel. I didn't know that the tunnel was longer than what's actually used.
Well, they originally planned it, they thought it might run out east.
Further east.
So
You can't
stop it. You have to build it beyond if you're going to connect anything to it.
Very interesting.
So it got built beyond.
Jimmy Rouse is with Transit Choices. There's information about Transit Choices on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page if you want some more information.
TransitChoices.org.
Yeah. Thank you, Jimmy. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Klaus, we always appreciate your perspective. You can check out Klaus's writings, his thoughts about these and other issues at Community Architect. That's just look him up. In fact, you can find a link to it on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page, Klaus Philipson's blog. Klaus, the president of ArcPlan here in Baltimore. Thank you, Klaus.
Thank you.
Midday second hour coming up. We'll talk about bicycling in the second hour of the show. But first, another quick reminder about how you can become a supporter of your public radio. Andy Beanstalk, what's the number to call?